You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Hello, I'm Amy Chiara, a new member of the team here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national news program focusing on union news, workers' stories, and social justice issues. My pronouns are she and her. That's right, Stick Together just got a little bit more woke and a little less bloke. This program is produced in Melbourne for 3CR and broadcast across the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. On the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, I acknowledge their unceded sovereignty and pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging. In today's episode, we speak to a rank and file member and contributor to VAPA Pulse, a rank and file newsletter within the Victorian Allied Health Professionals Association, about their challenge to the merger of VAPA with the Health and Community Services Union. They raise concerns about the transparency, communication and union democracy and the future of the VAPA membership. But first, some union news. ETU apprentices travelled to Canberra in October to launch the ETU's report, Shocked on the Job, Failed by the System. The apprentices told their stories about being failed by the apprenticeship system and their Apprentice Connect Australian providers, shortened to ACAP, and told ministers and MPs why the apprentice journey needs to be fixed. This year, the ETU surveyed 400 apprentices about their experience. The results found that 1 in 8 had been shocked at work, with most incidents not captured in the government workplace safety figures. 1 in 10 apprentices who had their classroom training delayed by more than a year had that chance of shock doubled. 1 in 5 apprentices were unable to name their mentor funded under the ACAP, even when presented with a list of ACAP providers. 1 in 4 apprentices waiting to get into TAFE have been shocked at work that TAFE wait times are failing apprentices and putting their safety at major risk. The report also found that almost half of electrotechnology and telecommunications apprenticeships and trainees will withdraw before completing their apprenticeship. The report recommended that the federal government must invest in more training places, including support tradespeople to enter the vocational education and training sector, monitor the extent to which training places are responding to demand, and a strategic review of the Australian apprenticeship incentive system. On Monday the 3rd of November, bus drivers for the Rail, Tram and Buses Union in Newcastle donned red berets in a week of protected action against Kaelus Downer, a company partly owned by the French government. The berets read, "French government gets paid, our bus is delayed. Newcastle's bus network is privately owned by Kaelus Downer, and the bus drivers are fed up with the profits going overseas while their wages and conditions wane, and the community deals with an inadequate public transport service. The berets are a part of a month of chaos to draw attention to the issue, which will include tooting the bus horn when leaving and entering the depots, a ban on driving buses with less than a full tank of fuel, a ban on operating buses without the first aid kit on board, and 12 and 24-hour strike action at the end of the month." Out in Western Australia, on November the 5th, the National Teachers and Education Union members at Curtin University made a stand and took strike action for safe workloads, job security for casual staff, strengthened fixed-term contract regulations and fair pay, with one member saying, "Workers are sick of universities being run like a corporation rather than places of education." The current EBA expired in June, and negotiations have been in progress since then, but management have failed to properly respond to workers' claims. Workers are seeking a 20% wage increase over 4 years, action on workload, improved workplace flexibility, job security and casual conversion, and strengthened fixed-term contract regulations. Down South Australia way, the Australian Nurses and Midwifery Federation held a stop work rally outside Parliament House in Adelaide. The ANMF says that public sector nurses and midwives are at breaking point and demand attraction and retention of a skilled workforce, management of fatigue and workloads, commitment to safe staffing levels and secure competitive wages, and a commitment to safe staffing levels and secure competitive wages. The government made an 11-hour new pay offer the day before, which included a 13% wage increase over 4 years and $4,500 in bonus payments. This offer was rejected at the rally, with one nurse citing Victoria's 28% wage increase for nurses, asking, "Why can't we have the same respectful, fair offer?" And finally, the Homeless Persons Union Victoria has recently become reactivated in response to Melbourne City Council's crackdown on the unhoused. Melbourne City Council has been employing Crown Security to send mobs of mostly male, black-clad security guards to harass the unhoused and move them out of public space. There are concerns about the hiring practices of Crown Security, with some guards seen wearing white supremacist symbols on their uniforms. Other councils across Victoria are following suit, which has many councils have shifted towards favouring a big business and conservative politics since the state Labor government's controversial single-member ward legislation. To support the Homeless Persons Union of Victoria, you can follow them online and see their installation, Home Trues, Postcards Unsheltered, created by Meg Mundell and peers. It's a public billboard installation in McQuillwraith Place, Melbourne CBD. Catch it before it disappears on November the 18th.
You're listening to Stick Together, workers' stories and union news.
No, it's a war on the worker.
War on the worker.
No, it's a war on the worker.
War on the worker.
Oh, it's a
broadcast
war
around
on
the country
workers.
Every week on the Community Radio Network.
We now turn, for the rest of this edition of Stick Together, to an interview I did with Cecilia from Vapa Pulse. Cecilia, Vapa Pulse, and other rank-and-file members of the Victorian Allied Health Professionals Association have been raising concerns about the sudden and unexpected merger of Vapa with HACSU.
My name's Cecilia. I'm an allied health worker. I work in public health and I'm a member and workplace delegate with VAPA. Earlier this year, myself and a bunch of other members in VAPA, we started up a members-run newsletter called VAPA Pulse, because we had concerns about the level of communication between members and our leadership, and we wanted to improve that, and we wanted to improve links and connections and membership networks amongst ourselves. And after we started that, we found out about a merger that was we felt being pushed through without appropriate member consultations. So I guess we've used our platform, our newsletter, and our connections as individual delegates and activists in the news, within the union, to do what we can to push back against the leadership and what they're trying to do at the moment, which we think is pretty undemocratic.
So the next question is, why are you against the merger? But I might also just add in the claims from VAPA. So according to VAPA on their website from the merger, it's about creating a stronger, united allied health and health professional workforce and greater leverage with bargaining is another claim, and means for more resources for the fights that matter most. So they're pretty abstract, actually, claims. They're not very detailed. So maybe you could explain what are your concerns and respond to VAPA leadership here.
I think, like, we need to sort of see this happening within the context of, you know, a membership that had been increasingly frustrated with our union leadership, and we'd been doing all sorts of things to try to improve our communication, to try and be able to provide feedback, to, you know, just to get them to respond to our emails. We'd had two lots of organising teams turn over. We had our whole public sector organising team just left overnight, and it was actually members speaking to each other that was like the way we found out about that initially. And so at the start of this year, at a delegates conference, we were told, well, our secretary, Craig McGregor, who was there, actually acknowledged that the communication from the union had been really poor and that they wanted to improve that, which was nice for them to acknowledge that. But then nothing changed. And then it was actually through a first kind of the rumour mill and kind of the grapevine that we first heard about this proposed merger. And then it was through member communication from HACSU that VAPA members first heard about the merger. First and foremost, it's incredibly undemocratic. We were told overnight after we alerted the union to the fact that we'd heard about it through HACSU, that they were planning to merge the two unions with very little detail. And even now, as you pointed out, the claims on the website are still pretty vague. Even today, we got apparently their best attempt at some detailed information, which was once again very, very vague, to the point of it almost being insulting in terms of saying things like, oh, members have raised this issue, but we can tell you that's not going to be an issue, without actually addressing people's concerns. In terms of things like, you know, the claims that it's going to create a single stronger voice and, you know, create greater leverage in bargaining and more resources and that sort of thing. I mean, I think first and foremost, we can say that, you know, as trade unionists, we believe in the collective power of workers, but kind of using that argument to try and silence criticism or even questions, like before we even get to criticism, questions from members saying, you know, why are you doing this? Why? What is with the timing of this merger as well? You know, it was suddenly introduced overnight as we're about to start our public sector bargaining period, a really, really important EBA facing allied health in public health, because of the wages and conditions for us have just deteriorated, you know, in the face of the cost of living crisis, but also in comparison to allied health professionals in other states. Victoria is paid very, very badly, and it's at a point where many allied health professionals in public health, you know, are questioning whether they can continue to afford to do the jobs that they do. So it's a very peculiar time to suddenly, out of the blue, inform membership that this is the, you know, this is the thing. This is the thing that's going to solve all our problems. Don't you know? Just trust us. It's going to happen, however you feel about it. Greater leverage in bargaining is an interesting one because, you know, I've got a number of friends and comrades who are members of HACSU, and they've just come out of their recent EBA bargaining period. And frankly, the allied health professionals felt really let down by the outcome of that EBA. You know, there's going to be a greater disparity in the pay conditions for allied health professionals and nurses in like the community mental health or forensic mental health sectors. You know, I've heard, I'm not brilliant at maths, but you know, I've comrades in HACSU have told me that within community mental health, like allied health professionals are going to be earning up to $70,000 less than their nursing colleagues over the life of their EBA. You know, so saying that joining with HACSU is going to give us greater leverage in bargaining, I think it's a reasonable question that we're asking. What are they basing that on, considering HACSU's recent reputation? I think the question of more resources is a really interesting one, and I think it's something that is worth kind of looking at it at a bit more. Firstly, if we take the numbers that they're presenting us at face value, in terms of, you know, they're saying, oh, if we combine the unions, we're going to have, we'll go from 20 staff at VARPA to 60 staff at HACSU. But then they're also saying we're going to go from 6,500 thereabouts members at VARPA at the moment, and combined with HACSU we'll have 20,000 members. And someone did the maths, and the ratio for staff to members is actually going to be greater. So as in there'll be more members per staff with this proposed merged union. And the other thing to say as well is that they're not talking about increasing the number of organisers. Like, they're talking about, oh, we're going to have increased specialist staff and policy workers and that sort of stuff. But they're also adding a, you know, an executive position in one of the new staff spreadsheet or staff sort of tables that I've seen, because I've actually, there's actually been a few different ones. So once again, we're not entirely clear about which bit of information that has been, you know, we've received in drips and drabs that we should be believing. But it's also looking at maintaining the secretary and assistant secretary in HACSU, and then adding our secretary as a third person at that level, which feels like a pretty top heavy union. And I guess given the questions that we have in terms of what our upper leadership in VAPA have been achieving in terms of, especially in the last couple of years, it's a real question in terms of how that's going to benefit members. And, you know, you need to remember that a lot of these members, like, we work in public hospitals, we know all the shortcomings of top heavy bureaucracies with people who earn a lot more money than us making decisions about things that, you know, directly impact us. I think members have got every right to actually ask questions about what real benefit we're going to see. And when they say, you know, there's going to be more resources, how are those resources going to be used? Because for a lot of us, we're not clear that it's going to be used to our benefit.
You're on Stick Together, workers' stories, union news and social justice issues.
I suppose going back to your point about this being quite anti-democratic, you also didn't vote for the leadership and the mechanisms of HACSU. So you're actually changing your democratic structures as well through this. And also typically after a merger happens, there's a sort of a rejigging of roles and who's who, and sometimes even centralizing of roles. I can understand your fears about this.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we're told that, you know, there's going to be this interim structure in this merged union, and then come August next year, which is when our next union elections are scheduled to be held, there'll be an opportunity to vote in a new leadership. And I guess that's another question that a lot of members have raised as well. You know, is that an influence on the timing of this? Like, I guess at the delegates conference earlier in the year, Craig McGregor made several comments at various stages when people questioned. And when I say question, sometimes it was a genuine question, people just wanting to get information about, decisions he'd made or ways he tackled things or ways our committee of management had tackled things. And at various points he said, well, there's an election next year, so if you people can run an alternate ticket if they want. And so it does beg the question, and members have asked the question, why are they trying to rush this through now when we're trying to focus on our bargaining? We're trying to actually make allied health in public health a realistic and sustainable career and job for people, when there's also this election looming on the horizon. And what will that mean in August next year when we come to vote for a new leadership? And then in this merged union, we will have our union leadership combined with a basically a Labor machine, because our union is not affiliated with Labor. But yes, so that's the other thing, HACSU. And apparently they're going to decide what percentage of the union will be affiliated with Labor and what won't. I don't know how that's going to work either. But it's just very confusing. And all these different things, we've just been receiving contradictory information. At first, when it was first, the cat was first let out of the bag, our president, Joanne Ginns, told us, you don't understand, we have to do it, our union's in crisis. And then End of last week, we received our annual financial report, and lo and behold, like, our union's actually managing fine in terms of how these things go. So every time we're told one thing, you know, give it a couple of days and we discover something else that completely contradicts that first bit of information. So, yeah, so naturally, members are really, really outraged at the lack of democracy, the lack of transparency, and the lack of communication. And the ongoing comment, when we do get a response, they're as vague and as dismissive as the things that you found on Vava's website.
And so how did you and your comrades go about challenging this merger?
Yeah, well, I guess we're still challenging it. It's a bit of an ongoing battle, but... like, at first when we found out about it, the first thing we did was put an article up on our Substack on VARPA Pulse to actually let people know that this was happening. That was a very popular piece that we put up there. And we were able to reach, you know, we're sort of a very modest outfit, but we were able to reach quite a lot of people within our union, but also sort of unionists sort of more broadly, and people heard about the story and were really supportive and reached out to us and that sort of thing, which was great. Members as individuals reached out to try and contact the union and to get a response, but we weren't getting anywhere fast there, and we had no clear idea of what sort of timelines we were looking at. So another member actually started up a petition. So after we weren't getting adequate responses as we liked when we individually contacted the union, another member decided to start a petition to get signatures for members of VARPA, because within our union there's a rule that says that if we get a petition of at least 200 financial members, if they sign the petition, then the union is obligated to call a special general meeting. And as part of the petition, we need to outline what our demands and what are the things we want to discuss and to vote on in that special general meeting. So the first petition that happened, I understand, got over 400 signatures. It was on a change.com or change.org type website that they weren't provided with clear details why, but the first petition was rejected, saying we were told it was invalid. So then at that stage, more and more people had heard about what was going on, and we were actually a lawyer with a background working with unions actually reached out to us and said, can I help you with what you're doing? And they supported us by drafting up our second petition, which is very impressive in terms of all the legal terminology and wording. And it also goes to show what you need to do in order to be able to communicate with your union. It's helpful if you've got a lawyer who can help you out with that. Once again, we circulated the second petition to members. When we got 201 signatures on the second petition, we sent it in to VARPA, which I guess, you know, in hindsight, it was probably just an awful lot of enthusiasm on our part, because we continued to, people were continuing to want to sign and want to support what we were arguing for. And then we were told, the way the rule works is that you send in your petition with the signatures, and then the union leadership has got 5 days to get back to you to inform you either that they've accepted your petition and that they're organising a special general meeting as per the agenda on the petition. Yes, so they got back to us and said that, yeah, it wasn't valid, because I think a handful of people who'd actually signed weren't are seen as financial as per the union books. So, good luck comes in three. We gave it another crack, and this time we were quite targeted and deliberate. And we, all the different activists and delegates who've been involved in the members' newsletter actually went and we divvied up the numbers, and we targeted individuals that we, individual members that we knew were financial. And we, once again, we got about 200, it was over 200, I think it was 222 in the end, after we sort of got rid of a few duplicates and stuff. So we sent that petition in to the union again on Sunday. So they've got until Friday to respond to us, to let us know if they're finally going to accept, this petition. And, you know, I guess we can quibble about, we can quibble about all these minor details, but I think it says a lot. We had over 400 people the first time, and then over 200 people again, two more times. And our leadership is still saying that they're not obligated to actually consult with us or talk with us. We're hopeful that we can actually have a meeting where we can debate this and discuss this and get clarity on all the things that they're not telling us. But I think it also, it's sending a really clear message to more and more members about the interests of our current leadership, given that they're so willing to put so much time and energy into avoiding a membership, you know, and avoiding a membership that, you know, wants to build an active union and wants to kind of improve the situation for allied health professionals, not just sort of in terms of as individuals, so we can like pay our rent and our bills, though that is very, very important, but wants to actually sort of become a workforce that is respected and recognised and valued for the skill and the contribution that we make in society every day.
That's it for Stick Together this week. If you want to catch up on our program, the podcast is available at 3cr.org.au/stick-together or at your favourite podcast site. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03 9419 8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Amy Chiara. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there is a union for you. And until next time, stick together.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.